as we mentioned earlier in the program, warm weather's finally kind of found us this spring, and it's actually the time of year when people are getting outside away from their kitchens and starting up that old barbecue. So we're lucky enough tonight to have Dr. Guy Crosby joining us. He's an official spokesperson of the Institute of Food Technologists, and he's also an adjunct associate professor with the Harvard School of Public Health, where he teaches a course on food science and technology, and also the science editor for America's Test Kitchen, which is a popular PBS television show, and publisher of Cook's Illustrated Magazine. Welcome, Guy, to the program.
Oh, thank you very much. It's nice to have you on. Glad to be here.
You're a busy guy. I'm sure glad that you found time for us.
Yeah, well, I'm retired, actually, but I keep very busy doing all sorts of things related to cooking and cooking science.
Now, there's nothing scientific about my cooking, so I'm sure I'm going to learn quite a bit just in this conversation, and we've kind of limited it a little bit to barbecue because there's a lot just to talk about there, but you have a wide range of information about, as the television shows, a wide range of information about science and cooking. You've got an amazing resume as well. The schooling that you have, you've graduated with a doctorate and also a postdoctorate at Stanford University in science. How did you happen to narrow down your interest or life into food?
Okay, well, good question. Well, you know, after I finished education and so on, I got a real job in industry. I worked in food ingredients industry and research and development for more than 30 years. So that moved me from organic chemistry, which is my degree, into food chemistry. So I spent many, many years there. And then when I retired in around 2002, I ended up starting to teach, as you mentioned, at Harvard School of Public Health in food science and working with America's Test Kitchen. And it just by happenstance, I wrote a letter into the founder and editor of America's Test Kitchen saying, I see you do a fair amount of science in your recipe development, and I'd be interested to help. And never heard anything from them until a year later, and they wrote back and they said, yeah, we could use somebody, you know. Could you help us find somebody? And so I helped them find me, you know. So I've been with them since the beginning of 2005 as their science editor.
I think you have a little fun with that, too. I looked at your website, and I saw you had a quote from W.C. Fields. I cook with wine, and sometimes they even add it to the food.
Right, yeah. Well, I go back a ways, so even I remember W.C. Fields, but maybe many people don't these days.
That's right. I kind of take it for granted, but he's been away from the limelight for a long time now.
Right.
We were talking about barbecue, and it's sort of a mystery about it. It's actually, barbecue is thought of as more of an art, but you go at most all cooking with a scientific bend to it. One of the first thoughts that comes to my mind, and this may be a little bit off of what you normally answer, whenever people talk about getting the Barbie out, there's always that little controversy about whether it's going to be charcoal or gas. Does that either one really have an effect on how the meat tastes?
Well, you know, of course, there's a huge amount of opinion out there about
right.
Which one is better than the other. And I must admit, I'm sort of on the lazy side, so I always opt for the gas grill because it's just so easy to turn on that gas, hit the igniter, and boom. You know, and you can do things that, as maybe you'll ask about, you know, about influencing the smoke flavor and the grill flavor and things with the gas grill. So there is a lot you can do that brings them pretty close together, but it, you know, it is hard to beat the real honest to goodness charcoal grill that people go to the trouble to do, because it does add that maybe that little bit of extra special flavor.
Now, is there some science in what you said, or is that kind of, are you bending to the public opinion?
Well, there is some science to it, but you really got to get down to, you know, exactly what you're grilling and how you're grilling it before it's going to make much of a difference. So, you know, I like to think of things as you can divide them into two categories, whether you're using charcoal or gas, and that is, you know, you're either going to cook something sort of low and slow, which is the more traditional barbecue method, or you're going to cook it, you know, fast and sear it, you know, on a really, really hot grill. So it takes different conditions to do each of those things. So you might, you know, if you have some kind of tough meat with a lot of connective tissue and you want to cook it low and slow, you can make it very, very tender that way, like a pork roast or pork ribs. You know, or if you want to take a steak and sear it and get a lot of browning and a lot of flavor from it, then you might heat it on a very, very hot grill. And it takes very different conditions. For the low and slow, you want a piece of meat that's going to be very, very moist on the surface, so it absorbs a lot of smoke flavor. And when you're grilling it hot and fast, you want to have the surface extremely dry so that it's going to brown quickly. So that's some of the basic science and differences between the different methods of grilling. But it really comes down to what you're grilling and how you want to cook it, rather than whether it's gas or charcoal.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that's a constant thing out there for barbecues is just what your secret marinade is, and everybody has their marinade, that whether it's meat or fish or poultry, that they love. How much does a marinade actually help, actually aid with the flavor of meats, and how much is just misconception about what you're doing?
Yeah, a really good question, because there is a lot of misunderstanding. You know, marinades, they vary so much in what their different components are. The thing that's most important in a marinade is the salt content, whether you just have salt or you have soy sauce that's high in salt, or teriyaki or one of these mixtures, because the salt will penetrate very quickly, diffuses into the meat, where it helps to alter the proteins and helps to tenderize meat, helps the proteins to hold on to more moisture. So that aspect of a marinade, whether you only marinate for 30 minutes or more, is important. When you get into these, well, let's put some acid in it, lemon juice, vinegar, lots of flavors and stuff, that becomes less impactful, because the vinegar or any acid like lemon juice penetrates only a few millimeters into the surface of the meat, as does nearly all the flavors that you might throw into, you know, the herbs and spices in a marinade, other than maybe garlic and sugar. So if you really want to try to get the maximum flavor out of a marinade, other than what the salt's going to do, which will season it, what you want to do is score the meat on both sides, you know, put a little 16th of an inch, 8th of an inch cut into the surface of the meat, so you open it up, so you allow the marinade to be able to get into and penetrate the meat a little bit more than it will if it just contacts the surface.
How about if we're dealing with fish? You know, we're talking in barbecue mainly, people are talking about meat, but rather than fish. But do the things such as lime or lemon juice, do they affect fish in a different way?
Well, what they do is, of course, that's like ceviche, where you actually soak raw fish into lemon or lime juice, and the acid does denature the protein, so it changes it, turns it a little more opaque, so it looks like it's cooked. But again, that's mostly on the surface that it's going to happen. So again, if you have an acid marinade, it's going to be more of a surface effect than anything else. But if you have some salt in there, that will get very quickly into the fish, and that will help affect its protein and its water binding, water holding capacity. So it helps. And fish, because it has very short muscle fibers compared to things like meat, you know, pork and beef, the marinade will and the salt will get in very, very, very quickly. The salt, so you only need to marinate a fish for maybe 15 minutes, whereas if you want to do a piece of meat, beef, chicken, maybe 30 minutes up to 45 minutes or even an hour. But fish, it penetrates in very, very quickly. So whatever effect you're going to have is going to happen fast. And it's mostly, you know, if it's acid, it's going to be on the surface, but the salt will penetrate.
You know, that brings to mind a short story that I had. I gave a friend my favorite fish marinade recipe, but I forgot to mention to him the length of time to leave them in the marinade, and he left them in overnight, and the fish was pretty much inedible.
Yeah, mushy. You know, if you let in any kind of, especially acid marinade, go too long, the surface of the meat, the protein breaks down so much that it becomes very mushy. And ultimately, you can actually overdo the amount of acid, and it will turn something like chicken. It will make it very, very tough. This has to do with the acidity and the proteins and how it reacts to the acidity. But you can go from mushy to tough depending on how much acid and how long you let it sit in the acid.
What is a Maillard reaction? What exactly is it? You hear about that, but what really is it?
Good question. So it is the reaction of, it can be proteins, but mostly important to flavor are the breakdown products of proteins, which are amino acids. You know, proteins are made of amino acids. And when they react with even the small amounts of sugars that are present in meat, the Maillard reaction takes place. So it's the reaction of certain sugars with amino acids. It creates very, very potent flavor compounds, as well as ultimately goes on and creates all the browning. So there's a correlation between the amount of browning that you might get on the surface of, say, a meat, and the amount of flavor. The more browning, the more flavor you're going to have. And a lot of the molecules that are created by this reaction, we humans can smell them at down at even parts per trillion it takes, just tiny, tiny amounts that need to be formed in order to contribute to the flavor. And a part per trillion is like 1 second in 32,000 years. I mean, it takes just a small amount of these molecules to contribute to the flavor. The thing is, when you're searing meat, you need the temperature to happen very quickly to be above 300 degrees Fahrenheit. So you want the surface of the meat to be very dry when you put it on the grill, so the temperature will increase, because the wetter the surface is, then what you're doing is you're spending all the time boiling off the water, and the temperature of the surface of the meat will never go above the boiling point of water until it becomes very dry, and only then will the Maillard reaction really take place very quickly and create all this browning and flavor. So go in with a very, very dry surface on the meat. You can put it in a freezer for 30 minutes, and that helps to dry the surface. Or put some salt, cornstarch on it, put it on the grill, and it'll brown and contribute lots of flavor and lots of browning. But it needs to be very dry, so it gets hot very quickly.
It is about 4 minutes past the hour of 6 o'clock. Of course, you're tuned to 90.7 FM WTIP in Grand Marais. And we are speaking with Dr. Guy Crosby, and Guy is the official spokesperson at the Institute of Food Technologists. He's a scientist. He knows a lot about food science, and we're talking about the art and the science of barbecuing your meat on these beautiful summer days that are coming up. How about searing, Guy? You just talked a little bit about that. Does that really keep some of the juices in the meat? Is that an effective method?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. You know, and it goes way back to the middle 1800s, about 1850. A German chemist who proposed and said he had proof that if you sear the surface of meat with really hot temperature, that you'll seal all the juices in there. And for a long time, people believed this was true. But then in more recent years, they've proven through various experiments and tests that it's just not true. It doesn't hold any water, literally. So searing the surface of the meat does not keep the juices in, because of the amount of juice that you release in a piece of meat, whether it flows from the meat or is trapped within the meat, is directly related to the temperature, the internal cooking temperature of the meat. And the higher it goes, the more the muscle fibers shrink and squeeze out moisture, and a lot of this stuff will just come flowing out of the meat. So searing it doesn't create a crust that helps trap all that moisture inside the meat.
Well, that brings us to another question that people talk about. Some people say that you have to leave the meat sit for a little bit after you're done cooking it before you cut it open. What would be the reason for that?
Okay, well, that is accurate. That's true. So when you cook a piece of meat, you know, the muscles are all made of proteins, and as they heat up, they shrink. And the hotter they heat up, the more they shrink. And about 85% of the moisture in a piece of meat is trapped inside the muscle fibers. So as they shrink, it's literally like squeezing a sponge. The moisture inside those muscle fibers is squeezed out. It's still inside the meat, but it's not trapped inside the muscle fibers. It's all liquid inside the meat. So if you immediately slice a piece of meat that you cooked, all that moisture that's been squeezed out of the muscle fibers will run out and you'll lose it. But if you let it sit for, depending on the thickness, the size of the meat, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, even 30 minutes, the muscle fibers begin to relax a little bit, somewhat, and they begin to reabsorb some of that moisture back into the muscle fibers where all that moisture was stored in the first place. So you'll help retain quite a bit more, 20-30% more moisture you can retain if you let it rest for that period of time versus immediately slicing it.
What are some of the mistakes that people commonly use when they throw their steak on the grill, as far as science goes and the way the meat ends up?
Well, I think, one of the things is the idea that, you got to put it on a searing grill. It really depends what your purpose is. If you have a steak and you want to sear the surface and create lots of flavor, then yes, you want to put it on a hot grill. But it works best if you have, say the coals on one side of a grill or only one side of the flame burning in a gas grill, put it over the heat, sear it, and then move it to the cooler side and let it finish cooking. So you sear it just enough to really get a nice brown crust on there and a lot of flavor, but then it probably isn't cooked the way you might want it, even medium rare inside. So you move it to the cooler side of the grill and let it finish. But if you want to do it low and slow, like more traditional barbecue, you want a lot of smoky flavor, then what you want to do is instead of having a hot surface so it sears quickly, you want to keep the meat very, very moist. And in that case, the best thing you can do is actually add a pan, aluminum, little, like a disposable aluminum roasting pan with some water in it. Put it inside your grill on the side away from the heat. And that absorbs a lot of the heat. It keeps the temperature much lower in your grill. It keeps a very nice moist atmosphere. And that is what you need if you want to smoke. The smoke flavors, say, from wood chips are mostly water-soluble. So you want to keep the surface of the meat nice and moist and low in temperature, and they will bind on and even dissolve in the moisture on the surface. So depending on what you want, a low and slow smoky meat, or whether you want a nice fast sear, kind of depends on how you want to cook the meat and the temperature of the grill and how you want to control the temperature. In fact, controlling temperature and time of the meat in the grill is probably the most important thing you could do.
We've been talking with Dr. Guy Crosby, and Dr. Crosby is a science guy as far as cooking, as far as cooking barbecue style, that's for sure. But you also have a book out, I think you published it in 2012, called The Science of Good Cooking. Is that pretty much available anywhere?
It is. It's still selling very, very well. It was on the New York Times bestseller list. It's done very, very well, and people, I think, find it. It's a great gift to give. But yeah, it came out late in 2012. And it has received a very, very high praise, so I would encourage people, if you have any interest in learning a little bit more about science, and it's written in really simple terms, take a look at the book and see if you might be interested in it.
Is there a lot of photographs in there?
Not many photos, no. Lots of drawings and artwork, but not many photos, and certainly not these colored pictures of beautiful-looking prepared foods that a lot of people like. I even like those in books. No, this is the one maybe thing that people don't find in that book.
Well, I was just hoping it'd be a little easier for me that way, but...
Well, there's lots of illustrations that try to illustrate the science, so I think it does a good job of explaining that.
That's great. It sounds great. I'm sure it's got to improve everybody's cooking if they understand the science behind what they're doing.
Yeah, well, it has 50 different concepts, cooking concepts, that it explains all the science about them.
Where can people go to see more about what you do, about that book, about cooking in general? You have a website?
I do, yeah. It's under, www.cookingscienceguy.com, all one word, scienceguy.com. So I've got science notes in there and other things, and my contact information, happy to address problems and issues and questions that people might have on cooking science.
Well, that sounds great. You know, I want to thank you so much for joining us here tonight, Dr. Crosby. It was great to have you on, and we all learned a little bit more about what we're doing all summer long, which is digging out the old barbecue.
Well, I'm glad to hear the warm weather is finally there. I looked you up on the map, and boy, yes, you are.
We haven't had much of it. Yeah. Well, thanks once again, and
sure.
Hopefully we'll talk to you sometime in the future.
Well, thank you for calling me. Wonderful to talk to you. Bye-bye.
Good night.